Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Humanitarian agencies warned today that it would be impossible to fill the void left by UNRWA, the main UN organization in Gaza providing emergency relief to Palestinian people. Israel's parliament has passed two laws that could prevent UNRWA from operating in the Palestinian territories. President Michael D. Higgins today joined the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach in condemning the Knesset's decision to ban the UN's main aid agency from operating in Palestine. Simon Harris called Israel's decision despicable, disgraceful and shameful. For more on this developing story, I'm joined now by Professor Fionnuala Ní Éalán, who's a QC and former Special Rapporteur on Counter-Terrorism and Human Rights. Professor Ní Éalán, Fáil sé rud, chuig an glór, you're very welcome to the programme.
Gairmíl mhaith, awesome bhainseo.
Can I get your reaction to that vote in the Knesset to ban the UN's aid agency, the UNRWA, from operating in Palestine?
I think we're almost all out of words at this point. You know, I think the phrases despicable, shameful are right. This vote, what's startling about it is the majority of the vote, only 10 members of the Knesset voted against it. It's a clear repudiation of Israel's obligations under the UN Charter. The Charter is clear. Member states who are members of the UN have an obligation to carry out and comport with the UN Charter and not to undermine UN agencies. I think we've never seen a vote like this in any country. There's no precedent for it. And it's not just that it's bad and horrific for the Palestinian people, but it's open season on the UN for countries who now decide, well, if Israel can decide it's going to outlaw UN organizations from peacekeepers to health workers to UNRWA, then we can just get rid of the UN because it no longer pleases us.
But then I'm reading from Haaretz, the newspaper in Israel, and one of their subheadlines is Nikki Haley, US, who's saying, according to Haaretz, US has long known UNRWA spreads anti-Israel, anti-Semitic hate. Biden-Harris funded it. So that's the context, I suppose, the US context, and we know there's an election going on during which this decision was made.
Well, absolutely. And I think what's really startling in a way is that this seems to be like a hedged bet on a US political outcome. UNRWA and the UN should be above this kind of petty domestic politics. It's clearly not. The core issue here is the obligation of a state, which was created, let's all remember, by a UN partition resolution. The state exists as a result of the UN. That state has obligations under the UN. And states who decide they're not going to play with the fundamental rules of the international legal order may well find themselves on the margins of the of that order and asked, as we saw, for example, with Russia, to leave certain organizations because the majority of states don't accept that they have a reasonable basis to be there anymore.
What do you think the international community can do, though, about this decision? You have an aid agency like UNRWA who is literally keeping people alive, keeping Palestinian people alive. If this decision is allowed to be implemented, what do you think, if it's contrary to the UN Charter, as you say, that you've outlined, what do you think the international community could do and should do?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that follow. If a decision like this, in fact, is a deliberate policy decision to bring about or to be reckless to the starvation and death of the Palestinian population, then that, I think, falls squarely into the area of international criminal law and the consideration of the ICJ under the Genocide Convention as to whether or not there is, in fact, a deliberate policy to kill Palestinians. And that, I think, is a really weighty charge. No country should or would want to be in that situation. The second is to remember that we have two warrants sitting before the International Court of the ICC, and those warrants are specifically focused on deliberately policy decisions by Israeli leadership to starve the Palestinian people. Again, weighty charges, and these kinds of policy practices, not some marginal decision on the sidelines, but a core policy decision by a state's parliament to starve another people, may in fact have these long-term consequences. But frankly, I suppose where we are is we're asking about the validity of membership as we did for Russia, and we're asking about arms transfers and support to a state that is not in compliance.
So you're putting the focus, you're putting the focus there, are you not, on the US?
Yes and no. We also have, as we know, we have a deep and profound relationship between the European Union. We have a favoured nations trading status. We have open access to EU markets by the State of Israel. All of these decisions by Israel should have consequences, or else international law is not worth the paper it's written on. People are really tired of words. They're tired of words that say we shouldn't be, you shouldn't be doing this, or you shouldn't be doing that. Yeah. We fundamentally know that the words only count if there are consequences. Now is the moment for consequences.
It's really interesting to listen to you outline the really clear-cut legal steps that are there to be taken. Professor Fionnuala Ní Eolain, the warrants at the ICC, the possible genocide charges that could be added at the ICJ. But it really, I suppose, comes down to realpolitik, doesn't it? There's a US presidential election ongoing now, and it would be electoral suicide for any of the US candidates, would it not, Democrat or Republican, to start talking in these terms before November the 5th?
Absolutely. But I would also say we do not live in a unipolar world. We also have other Security Council member states, and we have the General Assembly, which has the power to vote. And indeed, it's true that the symbolic vote of the General Assembly may not mean very much, but it should signify clarity on the state of international law. It should signal clearly what is acceptable and not acceptable. And other states have the power of the purse. The European Union has the power of the purse. And there are no similar elections happening for those 27 member states. So I think actually the ball frame has to move away from singular focus on what the US is doing or not doing. To be frank, I think all of us would observe that the US has done very little to prevent starvation in Gaza, other than dropping peanut butter sandwiches from the sky several months ago. And so now the time is for other states to use all of their available resources and the capacities they have in regional organization to take action, to respond to a clear breach of international law by a state that simply doesn't seem to care what other states say.
Yeah, but as you say, people are now tired of words and what could be done and so on. Earlier in the programme, we spoke with a doctor called Dr. Reja Musla from Med Global, who's recently returned from Gaza. And she described to us, and I found it an extremely difficult listen, but she described to us as a doctor trying to treat a 10-year-old girl in Gaza who suffered 90% of her body was burned. Yeah. And she had no painkilling treatment to give her. And this girl was calling for her mommy and daddy and her immediate family for hours and asked that the doctor hold her hand before eventually she passed away. And my question is, why is there such a disconnect, in your opinion, between stories like that of personal suffering that's happening in Gaza every single day and the political need and the legal need to do something about it? Why do you think there's such a disconnect there?
I think we fundamentally struggle with whose lives are grievable and whose lives are not. And I think it's been apparent to many, including I think those of us who've been in the Middle East, who've been in Gaza, who've been in Israel, that some lives are grievable and some lives have no consequence. And that harsh reality is played out when the death of a child in Gaza is not considered to have the same importance as the unacceptable death of children on October 7th, that there's some kind of difference in the quality of protection and the right to life of these children. And that's just morally unacceptable. And I suppose I refuse to accept, I think the Irish people refuse to accept, that we accept that moral equivalence. It's very clear in our country. We don't accept that. We're very clear, and our government is very clear, that actually all of these lives are matter, and that we will continue to speak, even as we are sometimes, as they say, we are the lonely voice in the international community, insisting on the rights of Palestinians and insisting also that Israel has a right to exist, that this country has to be told what its obligations are. And we won't stop saying that. So the words are really difficult, and we're out of words, but we have to continue to insist on the unacceptability of the status quo in Gaza.
Yeah. Do you despair finally sometimes? I mean, we've talked about the legal routes available here before, Fionnuala, but the suffering goes on. I mean, is there any hope that something of substance will happen soon?
I mean, I do. I think we're all despairing, but we also can't close our ears to what we hear, meaning sometimes that pain that you're hearing is so indescribable and so difficult that we're switching off our phones. We're not watching the TV. We don't want to hear that child suffering story. Mm-hmm. But actually, we simply cannot morally choose to switch off. And I think that's the kind of, in some sense, the tenacity of the human spirit, is that we simply do not accept this. And that's the only way through, because to accept it, I think, is to kind of extinguish a light, not just on Palestinian humanity, but on our own humanity, because we refuse to see theirs.
Professor Fionnuala Ní Éileann, thank you very much indeed. Míle buíochas leat a Sochlár Tlín, Éireann Glór.